Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here again today. This is episode number 446, and in just a moment, I will be sharing with you a conversation I had with Dr. Aditi Sethi Brown about the documentary film, The Last Ecstatic Days, which is an absolutely incredible, beautiful film that features the work of Aditi with a patient during his last days of life. And we talk all about the film and also let you know that I am going to be doing a virtual screening and discussion for this film at the end of this month on Sunday, March 24th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. There will be links in the show notes for you to sign up if you'd like to join me, view the film, and then stay for a discussion online afterwards. I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with other viewers about this film. I know that you will enjoy it. It is incredibly inspiring, and I can go so far as to say life-changing. So take a listen to my conversation with Dr. Aditi Sethi Brown today, and on the show notes for this page, you can get a link to watch the trailer, and you can also just go ahead and register for Sunday, March 24th. If you can't attend my screening of the film, there are other screenings available, and if you go to the website for the film, you'll be able to see all of them listed there. So there might be one on a different date that would work better for your schedule, but no matter what, I hope you will take a look at the film, and I would love to see you on March 24th at the discussion that I'm hosting, if that's possible. So again, go to the show notes, eolupodcast.com, look for episode 446, and there you'll see a link where you can register for the screening and the discussion, and join in. But first, take a listen today to this conversation. I do have one more announcement. So the very same week as that screening, I'm also hosting an author Q&A session with Star Bradbury. She is the author of the book Successfully Navigating Your Parents' Senior Years. That's the March selection for A Year of Reading Dangerously. And Star has offered to do a Q&A with anyone who'd like to come on and talk to her about the contents of her book, ask her questions. And even if you haven't read the book yet, you'll find it very valuable and helpful. This will be a live Q&A session where you can ask Star your questions directly. This is on Tuesday, March 26th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Again, there will also be a link for this event on the show notes. I kind of booked a lot for 1 week, but you know, everything happens in the last week of the month. So I hope you can also join Star Bradbury and me for that event. I would also like to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Amy Morgan, and Don Brisky for making a donation on PayPal. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks to all of you who've been showing up for the last few years, making contributions to help keep this show on the air. I appreciate you more than you can ever imagine. So we are going to move on now with my conversation with Aditi. I know you'll enjoy it. And again, I do hope you'll sign up to join me for the virtual screening and discussion for the film. I'll come back after this conversation with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so happy to welcome back my special guest, Aditi Sethi Brown. Dr. Aditi, who I spoke with, I think it was last year, the last time we spoke. And today we have the great privilege of talking about a film that's premiering now, The Last Ecstatic Days. And so I'm going to read a little bit about Aditi and we'll talk about the film. Dr. Aditi Sethi Brown is a hospice and palliative care physician, end-of-life doula, and musician. She is an emerging and important voice for shifting our culture's understanding and approach to dying, death, and bereavement care. Dr. Sethi is also the founder and executive director of the Center for Conscious Living and Dying in Swannanoa, North Carolina, which we talked about in our last interview. She is featured in the forthcoming film, The Last Ecstatic Days, a film about a young man with brain cancer in search of community and the hospice doctor, Aditi, who gives up everything to honor his dying wish. And you can learn more about the film at thelastecstaticdaysmovie.com. And you can learn about the Center for Conscious Living and Dying at the website ccld.community. And more about Aditi's work at Aditi Sethi, SETHIMD.com. And all of those links will be in the show notes for this episode. So Aditi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's great to see you again.
Yes, it's so lovely to see you. And I've been so excited to talk with you about this film, but I just rewatched it a couple of days ago. And part of me feels like I still feel like I'm in this sacred space from seeing the film again. And it almost feels like, oh, I don't want to get out of this space by using my left brain to talk about the film. It's hard because much of what I experienced in watching the film is just ineffable. It's very hard to even put into words.
Yeah, and I really attribute some of that magic, if you will, to the director, Scott Kirschenbaum, who really had the vision of taking us on a journey through Ethan's dying experience and interweaving Ethan's life into his dying days. And it was just so powerful for me to witness him.
Gosh, he did just such a beautiful job. And before we talk much about the film, I was just hoping you tell everyone about Ethan, because I want everyone to just get to know Ethan as we're talking about the film, because he was just such a special person. And Ethan, and then how you came to know him.
Yeah, Ethan is still a teacher for me in many ways. You know, I met him only 2 weeks before he died. And the way I met him was, I got a call from a friend saying, his name was Jojo. He said to me, there's a brother that needs our help. And I asked him more, and he said, you know, I've been following this man, Ethan Sisser. He's 36. He's been living and dying with a brain tumor. And he was documenting his journey during the pandemic, because he was alone in Brooklyn when he was diagnosed. His mom lived there, but he was in the hospital system there back in 2019, as you can imagine, in 2020, early 2020. And he's been documenting his journey, and I'm just so moved by his way of being, and so his honesty and his vulnerability. And he's put out into the universe, I want to film my dying process to support people to have less fear around death, and I want to die in community. Neither of which seemed possible when Jojo heard that call. When I got that call, he was in an inpatient hospice in Charlotte, where his dad lives, about 2 hours from Asheville. And so he was dying in a hospital room, essentially. Beautiful. I mean, the hospice facilities are beautiful, and it wasn't quite what he envisioned. So I got that call, and then Jojo also called our friend Scott Kirschenbaum, who's a director of films, and said, hey, would you do this for this man? And at that moment, it was game on, and everything just moved very quickly after that. And interestingly, a week prior, Scott Kirschenbaum had just started working consulting with Jessica Zitter for her media company. So there was already, I was very aware of the synchronicities. And I had seen Jessica Zitter talk on the End Well stage in 2017, and I was admiring her from afar. And so it was just a beautiful moment when I realized that they were connected too. And she helped support the film.
And Ethan wasn't just a teacher in his dying, because he was a yogi, and he'd really been a teacher and healer. It looked to me from the videos that I saw before he ever got the brain tumor.
Yes, I think he spent much of his life seeking to understand what we're doing here, who we are, who he is, who he was. And he did it in community, and always it seemed to be in service of others. So he was he did a lot of plant medicine work in Hawaii, and he was a yogi. He studied Thai masseuse. I learned recently, and that's what I mean, I keep learning about him and his life. I learned from his mother that the reason he learned belly dancing in India, one of the few Caucasian males to go to India and learn belly dancing, was to help his clients and be in their body and help with their pain. So just an amazing being. And you can reflect it in his, in the movie for sure.
And that's a wonderful little clip in the movie too, of Ethan belly dancing in a whole room full of women, but he's just so passionate and he's so beautiful.
So free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you mentioned, that one of the miracles, I guess, of this film is the way Scott wove in all these videos, because Ethan, as a teacher, there are videos of him teaching yoga and doing body work with clients. And then all of these videos that he made himself for social media after his diagnosis. And I was amazed he had a pretty big following on social media, on TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, everywhere, and people following this journey of his, which seems really remarkable to me, that he gathered that group of people around him.
Mm-hmm. All over the world, I think people were touched by him. And it's refreshing to see social media used in that way to really connect us to our shared humanity. And I think he did that very beautifully.
Yeah, you're right. Social media is so powerful. And if we do use it for the good, you know, we can heal hearts and we can educate people and ease people's fears and really come together across miles and miles. And that's what Ethan did. And would you tell us about, he had the nickname E3, or was that, was that a handle on social media? I think he would use.
Well, I had been told that he had received a mantra from one of his shaman teachers in Hawaii, and I don't know exactly how it came to be, but this mantra was, and you might have heard it. You've heard it. You hear it throughout the film. But I am embodied. I am empowered. I am ecstatic. And so over time, that became the E3 affirmation. And so I think he started using that, early on, after he was gifted that mantra.
And which is partly why the word ecstatic is in the title, it seems to me, because that seemed to be important to Ethan. He talked about being able to find joy and ecstatic in the dying process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. I remember seeing him do the mantra, the affirmation. I think he ended a lot of his videos with it. And I just didn't get it. I didn't quite understand. I may have even had a little judgment. Like, oh, it seems a little simplified and cheesy. And now it's a guiding mantra for me. And partly it was during his experience, I call it the Ethan journey, because that's what it felt like for me. It was truly a mystical experience, in that I was altered, I was guided, I was receiving a lot of information, and I had never thought of myself as someone who could access that. I think we all can. So I say it, that's why I say that. But as the 2 weeks progressed into this day, that mantra has become something that I returned to, because I had felt fully embodied in those moments caring for him, very empowered to do what I was able to do, which was just really lead and guide him in the way he wanted. And it required a bit of me to let go of parts of myself and concerns about what other people would think and all the things. And then the ecstasy that followed, and the magic and miracles that have followed the Center for Conscious Living and Dying, namely. But
The ecstasy, I mean, it is palpable when you watch the film. I mean, I came away from it feeling that ecstasy, like I got to share in it. And you don't expect that to come from a film that shows the actual dying process of a person. That's what is kind of mind-blowing about it, I think, is that it's an opportunity we get to sit in the room at the bedside with Ethan as he's dying, and to feel all of the emotions that are present and all of the energy that's present at that time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Every time I watch it, I was just at a screening in New York and Philly, beautiful experiences. And it takes me right back to those moments. So it definitely is it evokes and invokes all sorts of emotions and energies that were actually present during that, and actually often present at the bedside of anyone who's dying, if we're aware of it and open to it.
Yeah. And so Ethan himself, he seemed very, very conscious, totally present, totally aware. I don't know if before he got the terminal diagnosis, and maybe you don't know this either, if he had for a long time had this awareness, one day I'll die and I want to be prepared for it, or if that all came through the process of his illness. I don't know.
You know, he talks about his suicide attempt or plan for his plan, and actually almost execution of the plan. So I think he probably contemplated leaving his body before it was his time. And my sense is he really prepared for death all his life through the medicine work, through the ego deaths, through the understanding of the mystical traditions and the and through meditation and yoga. I have a sense he really prepared for it all his life. That's my sense.
And you made the comment in the film, I think in the introduction to the film, that the people who have prepared themselves in some way for dying, in your experience as a hospice and palliative care physician, and I would echo that too from my experience, have a somewhat smoother process of dying, even though we can't imply that it's easy or that it's without pain or without challenges, but there's something about it when people feel prepared and they're present and not afraid that changes the quality of that experience.
Yeah. You know, what comes to mind, I don't know why it just popped into my mind, is when I was preparing for the birth of my first child, I remember telling Jay, my husband, I have no idea who I'm going to be, how I'm going to be in that birthing experience. And I did so much preparation and contemplation. I did hypnobirthing, and I'd done some OB in my family medicine training. So I'd been around a lot of births, and I feel that practice and preparation equipped me with tools that I could use to eliminate a lot of the added fear and anxiety that comes from an experience. So I was very present. I was, you know, breathing with the symptom or the pain. And I liken that to how I've seen people prepare for death. There is, you're right, there's no guarantee there's not going to be pain and discomfort and fear, but it's what do we do with that fear, and how does that impact us as we're dying?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, because I think often about, well, when people make a birth plan, or even when people plan ahead for their end of life, those plans may never come to fruition. They may not be possible when the time actually comes, but there's value in doing the planning only because it helps you think about it and process it, and you're actually preparing yourself emotionally and mentally for this transition that's really unknown to you, that's really uncertain.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen, you know, with Ethan, I remember he was very much an observer. And so he would come, he could barely talk. And you see it in the film, he could barely communicate. And he would call me over and he said, I just want you to know, I can't feel, there's no sensation. You know, he had a brain tumor and paralysis on his left side, but as the right side was getting weaker too, he would comment, I can't feel this part of my hand. And there was no added tension or anxiety or fear or resistance to what he was experiencing. It was just an observation and a witness. So therefore, his blood pressure didn't go up. He didn't have more anxiety. He didn't, you know, maybe that could result in more pain. So all of those practical ways of just observing and being with what is, were really evident in taking care of him. It was really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a point, I think this was earlier, when he was saying, could dying be fun? Is it possible that it could be fun? And it seemed like Ethan had just a wonderful sense of humor in all the videos that I watched. Well, it's like joy, really, just overflowing joy. But he could laugh and see humor in everything. And it seemed like he carried that through, even through his dying process.
Yes, very much. You know, when I first talked to the nurse practitioner caring for him at the hospice facility, asking, you know, about transporting him from the hospice house in Charlotte to the hospice house in Asheville, she said, absolutely not. She said, he is so imminent. He's aspirating. He's not able to swallow anything. So everything that he puts in his mouth is going into the lungs, and he's coughing. And I think he would die en route, or it's very possible he would die en route. So I refuse to accept the transfer or sign off for the transfer. And she said, he can leave against medical advice. So this is a man who is on the brink according to the medical provider, that he was on the brink of death. And then when he came to us, and 2 days later, he ended up in the hospice house, surrounded by love and celebration, and he lived another 14 days. And so he actually had a party. It felt very much at the beginning like it was a celebration of his life, a gathering of strangers, really. And it was just profound. And then there was a point where you could tell that he was, and he did comment on this, it's not in the film, but commented on part of him wants to stay and be a part of this, and part of him knows it's his time. So it created a little bit of challenge, and then we gave him space, and then he proceeded on his way. So I think it was joyful for him.
Wow. It calls to mind the fact that, like, Ethan asked for this community, a community to help support him when he was dying, and it happened, and it happened over such a short amount of time, which is phenomenal. You answered the call. Scott answered the call to do the filming, but then there were all just tell us about the other people in the film. I see so many alternative practitioners who were there working with him, and I'm just blown away that all these people did come together kind of to create a new family for Scott, in a way, around him, or Scott, for Ethan, around him, to support him, and how beautiful it was.
Yeah, it was. You know, I think another thing that came up as you're asking this question is how many of us have friends and family all over the world, and our community is spread out. And so Ethan had people that would have, if it hadn't been COVID and if circumstances had been different, that could have come and offered what we did for him. But because of those circumstances, he was not able to create that in the time he had remaining. And so getting him to the hospice was the first step. And there was a group of about six of us that basically I just put a call out to people that I knew were interested in the supporting others to have a death that is, at least if possible, reflective of the life they've lived and honoring people's journey. And so I reached out to some good friends, and one friend in particular, Brent, who's in the film, that Ethan told me about and knew. And so it was going to be a small community of people supporting him to hopefully to be filmed in the hospice house, and unless we couldn't film, which was what happened. They denied the request to film. At that moment, I put a call out to the bigger, larger Asheville community that I knew was interested in this topic as well. So it's years of cultivation of relationships and gathering around this conversation, death cafes and grief ceremonies and creative ways of engaging in this conversation that had happened leading up to that moment, which is such a gift because everyone was so willing and so eager to serve. And Ethan's energy just rippled. I mean, people were feeling that what was happening in Asheville, you know, in California and elsewhere. And it was so supported on so many levels through, you know, the nursing support that we did have to, we asked for because he was on high dose pain medicines and anxiety, seizure medications. So we needed some medical support in the home. But then there were people that were offering massage to his mother, that were showing up to bring food for all of us, that, you know, supported him in rituals and ceremony. And it was just profound. And during that time, so many people came up to me saying, how can we do this again for each other? How can we create this for each other? Because it was so energizing and life-giving for each of us.
Yeah, it was really phenomenal. And the film does such a good job of capturing it. Even just the smallest little moments, but of, you know, a person holding his hand or touching his face, and then just the presence of every single person that worked with him. It's really remarkable to see. And I think for people, if people watch the film who are not familiar with what hospice could be like for someone dying at home, it's a good introduction in a way. Not that every hospice would be just like this, or every death would be like this, but the idea I just loved it when they turned his bed around so he could see out the window and he could see the beautiful mountains. And that's one of the advantages of just being in a home where you can change things, you can be creative, you can help someone be so intimately comfortable in their surroundings. And that's one thing that hospice does offer.
Yeah, you know, I think a reminder of what hospice can and can't offer is that hospice would have come into the home and did do all the medical care, but they wouldn't have offered that 24/7 care that we offered him. And so that's the one thing that is a unique piece to this idea of community supported death care, that can supplement the care that hospice does provide. So
yeah, that's such a good point, that it was the community of people willing to provide 24/7 care for Ethan, and that responsibility falls on family members, as sometimes who are limited in their strength and their skills and their ability to care for their loved ones. So being able to bring together a community is really valuable.
Yeah, and that's what happened in Ethan's situation. His parents, who were separated, they both had physical limitations to caring for him as he declined. And that's how we ended up in the inpatient hospice facility to begin with. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it does really emphasize the point that we need community death care, and we need practitioners who are willing to come and be part of the community for a dying person, but we need lots of volunteers and lots of neighbors, lots of other people in the community who would be willing to step up and be part of that team to help care.
Yeah, I think it's a return to a way of being with death that we're not as familiar with anymore in our modern world anyway.
Yeah, so very true. One thing that really made an impression on me in the film is that there was a time, I think it was live, there was a live stream going on through social media, because I saw, and the film includes like all the comments that were popping up, and people from everywhere were saying things like, "You changed my life. You taught me so much, Ethan." And obviously people who've been following him throughout his entire illness. And that gave me goosebumps to see this is a worldwide community at that moment, creating a vigil together through social media for Ethan. And it was phenomenal. I've never seen anything like that take place before.
Yeah, me neither. And I have to say, his dear friend Shelley Whitelight came to be with him in his final 2 weeks, and she's very tech savvy, and she was able to stream his dying moments, you know, and the vigil. I think that was probably 24 to 48 hours before he died. And it was candlelit. There was music. There was just remembrance and honoring and all that positive energy. You can feel it in those clips of the film. It was profound. And people were watching and tuning in to this man's, you know, final breaths, really. And yeah, I'd never experienced anything like it. And just the fact that he would have been, based on his life and how he was with his illness, would have been comfortable, was comfortable, wanted to share it with the world. Like that in and of itself was just life-changing for me. That honesty, vulnerability, and no shame, no guilt. I don't know. It was powerful.
Yeah, that has stood out to me. Like, wow, what would it be like to be that authentic and that level of pure love that you just have no shame and can tell your story and just be completely who you are in every moment. And the power of that, just watching, even watching his older clips from YouTube and TikTok, you could just feel it. You just feel his energy coming through in all of the clips that he made.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, how comfortable he was with his post-surgical, after, you know, major deformity, if you will. It just became a part of him. But he was so willing to share it. You'll see him. He has an abdominal flap on his scalp after surgery, removing much of his bone because of a bone infection. And he was just so willing to, hey, look at me.
Yeah, I remember he said something about, we could put a yarmulke over it and I won't even need to pin it on. It'll just stay right there. it was just, yeah, just so, so precious. And I mean, it really does depict the dying process. He was unable to eat or drink in the last days. And so it really does depict accurately what it looks like when someone is dying, and there are challenging parts in the film because we see him dealing with secretions, and we also see the distress that it caused his mother, and comforting her and just making him as comfortable as possible through the entire process of dying. But it's really good because people have not been able to witness that or see that before. And we really need to. We need to see the dying process.
Yeah. In a way that's not dramatized, you know, like in the movies, either really horrific or very glamorous.
Yeah, so true. So true. It was beautiful and it was painful, and it was at times there was a bit of distress in it all, but there was also just joy and light, incredible light, like coming from Ethan, like from his face, it seemed, and just this feeling of love emanating throughout the film.
Yeah. And that reflects how those 2 weeks were overall. You know, I think, as you know well, probably, the dying experience can bring up a lot in the individuals that are a part of it. You know, not the individual who's dying himself, so that is true, but every single person, every caregiver, every volunteer had an experience. And it wasn't always favorable. There was a lot of emotion, a lot of fear, a lot of, you know, coming up against desire to control, like how someone might have thought it should play out is not how the other person would have done it, and that caused tension. And then you add a film crew on top of that, so none of that is captured in the film, but I just wanted to name it, that it was overall one of the most profound experiences, and it had its own challenges, because death does, you know, the dying experience does.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for sure. You mentioned, like, I mean, it sounds like it was profound indeed for everyone who participated. It appeared from what I saw that there was some healing between Scott and his parents, from what is shown in the film. And that's really beautiful too, because we know that kind of transformation is really possible at the end of life when it may not have been possible even a few months earlier than that. It's something opens and it becomes possible to heal.
And Ethan commented that what he wanted his family to experience was entering a space where there's love and presence. And he didn't feel responsible to have any outcome or healing happen. He just said, whatever healing happens as a result of being held and supported in this loving space, so be it. And it was just the most beautiful thing to hear him say. I mean, there were many beautiful things that he said, but that was one that stuck with me, because I tend to feel responsible for everybody in my life, and I'm letting go of that more and more. But yeah, you just create a space of love and connection and willingness to be with what is, and let the realness and the rawness all surface. And then, yeah, it's about all you can do. And then the rest is up to each individual, really, or grace.
Yeah. And it sounds like you answered the call to come and help. For whatever reason, it must have moved something in you to say, "This, I need to do this." And so you really, I'm sure, didn't know what to expect or have any idea what was really going to happen. And what was that like for you?
So I've been doing hospice work since I was 17, and have sort of been the observer in the medical field. I may have said this in the last time we talked, but probably 14 years ago now, or no, 10 years ago, I sort of started envisioning or feeling this little, I say it was like a whisper in my ear and a knowing in my heart that there was something else I was meant to do. And I had just finished training, so I thought, that's ridiculous. I just finished, let me just ground in the medical model first. But it was a little intuitive knowing that there was something more. And for 10 years, you know, I tried on different things, became a death doula on the journey. And when I got the call with Ethan, it was like the deepest knowing that this is mine to do. Do what you can. do your best, have no fear. Because I was, you know, when I discharged him from the hospice where I worked for 10 years and I loved my job and my career, I didn't know if I was going to get reprimanded for that. I discharged him to a different hospice so that I could stay connected as a doula and stay have that continuity. And so I was just, but I didn't have a lot of fear. And so that was new for me. I had a thought, I'm very linear. Historically, I was very linear, practical, thought about all, I had pros and cons list for everything. But in this moment, I could not deny that there was a force greater than myself guiding this thing. I still don't fully understand it. And so it was the ultimate experience for me of surrender and speaking what I knew, what my truth, not afraid of how it's going to be received. Even in supporting those, the caregiving team, I was sort of the point person. And I had to be really honest and direct and coordinate and be in a role of leadership that I've kind of shied away from. I've always been kind of more of a quiet leader. But this required much of me to step up and speak up and, yeah, and navigate all the complexity of it all. So it was really empowering. And that's where those words, you know, the mantra, I was empowered for the first time, really empowered. And all out of love and devotion to this experience and this person who was calling it in. So it was life-changing, but it was the ultimate surrender is how I would describe the experience.
So you really took a risk professionally in doing that. And you were talking about how you may still be feeling some of the changes that it brought about in you. And you mentioned, tell us more about the Center for Conscious Living and Dying, because it sounds like that kind of grew from your experience with Ethan.
Yeah. So as Ethan was taking his last breath, I was in the other room having a conversation with a friend. And I said, I just have this knowing I have to put in my notice and there's something I'm meant to do. And so again, without a plan, I did that. I put in my notice and left 3 months later and just jumped into this river that was flowing and guiding me to next steps, like the next bank, or, you know, I just kept being guided. And what emerged was the Center for Conscious Living and Dying was a sort of a for-profit LLC that I had created in 2018 and then started working with Cassie Barrett, a green cemeterian, with it. It was just more of a educational passion project platform. So along the way, after Ethan died, it became a nonprofit. It became really clear that what we did for Ethan was community supported end of life care, which I'd never really put those words together, even though they've been put together in the social model for hospice and countries all over the world have adopted this model, but I had never put those words together. And so what became clear was the center was meant to be, to have community at the heart of it. And that's what has led to the formation of the Center for Conscious Living and Dying here in Asheville, Swannanoa proper, but, and it's a community of now, I think, 250 volunteer members active on this property and a beautiful home that was gifted for use for 3 years. And then we'll try to buy it back. And then, it's just been it's offering community supported end of life care for up to 3 individuals at a time in the Omega Home model, which I spoke to you about last time.
Yeah.
It's been a profound journey. It's just, and continues to unfold. So.
Wow. Thank you, Ethan, for contributing to that vision.
Absolutely. Definitely the catalyst.
And who knows, Ethan, through this film, when other people get to see it, how much greater the ripple effect might be of other communities deciding we need this and we want to do this.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Because it really requires a home, a space, and people willing to show up. And then you work with an existing hospice team. It sounds simple. There's a lot of, you know, organization and back end and coordination and training and teaching and all that. But really, at its essence, that's what it requires. A group of dedicated people to serve.
And so you have to trust a lot and surrender, as you said. You have to kind of let go of our old models and our old ways of thinking how things should be done.
Yeah. It's time to get creative is how I say it, you know. Because we know our aging population is going to need a lot of us and require a lot of us. And our existing systems aren't satisfactory to those that are going to need them. And so, yeah, how creative can we get? And what are the possibilities? That's what I'm always curious about.
And community-centered death care helps us fill in some of the gaps for the people who don't have a family, don't have others in their life who would be able to step up and care for them. And that's where we're going to find a huge amount of need, I think, in the coming decades.
Yes. And, you know, community can bring up a lot of stuff for each of us as individuals. There's a reason we are individualistic. It's almost, in some ways it's easier, but really it's not long term, you know. But so it's really that's what I love about the title, the name, Center for Conscious Living, because that's really where so much of the deep awareness and honesty and self-reflection comes in, so that you can show up for each other as a hollow bone. So that's been an interesting journey too, to witness how important that is.
Yeah. And I think it seems like the need for community is really coming up right now in our whole society, and people are sometimes finding it through social media, but it's completely different. It isn't like being face to face with another person and having to work through how are we going to do this and how are we going to agree on something together. And it feels like we really need to go in that direction of bringing in more community and more collaboration and more working together.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Would you say, are there other things that you learned through this process of working with Ethan and making the film?
Oh, wow. So much. Let's see, what would I feel to share? I think I've spoken to most of the things that really stick out. But I think also that with Ethan, his ability to teach and to grow and evolve, even in his dying 2 weeks, really reminded me that we are really living until our last breath. And we tend to sort of take for granted those opportunities that can arise at the bedside for healing, for epiphanies, for realization. I mean, what he gifted us in his last 2 weeks, some people don't ever get to experience that in a lifetime, or even share that in a lifetime, or have that impact in a lifetime, you know? But
yeah,
it was really, yeah, beautiful to witness that too.
Yeah, it's such an interesting balance that we accept our mortality and we prepare ourselves for dying, but always with the emphasis on living every moment, even until the very last breath. And I wanted to just talk about that a little bit, because the film goes on to show after it shows Ethan's last breath, and it goes on to show the after death care that he received, which was also so special and so beautiful. If you'd talk a little about that.
Yeah. You know, he said he wanted to be buried, but didn't really think too much more about what he would want after he died. And so really we went to his mother and just offered options for his after death care. And the options are, you either call, you know, you, when he, we pronounce him, then the nurse, sorry, when he takes his last breath, you call the hospice nurse and they come and they pronounce him dead. And then after a certain amount of time, you can call the funeral home or crematory to come pick up his body and take him. And we offered that. And then we offered the alternative, which is what you see, of us tending to his body, honoring his body, anointing his body, bathing his body ritually, and then having him lie in honor on dry ice or techni ice, so that we can celebrate and be with his dead body. And for some different spiritual traditions, the spirit takes about 3 days to leave the body. And she wasn't attached to that time frame. His dad nor her were attached to that. So I think he was in honor for about 2 days. And then we buried him. We did a green burial. You see the pine casket that Brent made for him, that was decorated by the children, our children. And then his brother hand dug the grave. And you see the images of that. And again, Brent making the casket. And then the procession, we transported the casket to the bedside, to the graveside, and then we closed the grave. And it was just, all of it was so, so deeply healing and supportive, I believe, for his family too. It's such a beautiful way of honoring.
Yeah. So the film, I mean, it's a wonderful depiction of the whole process, and to also show the green burial, home funeral, home-based burial, I guess we could call it, but how lovely it can be, and his mother helping to wash his body. It's just, it's so touching and so inspiring. And I think it could make many of us decide, I really hope that things are like that when I die. I hope something like that happens, something close to that kind of beauty and the sacredness that was created around him.
Yeah. I think for me, it's sort of, as long as people know they have options, then whatever you choose, you know, is a wonderful, wonderful. Some options are better for the environment. But really, I think not knowing that that's an option. With that, and when we did a similar after death care and green burial experience for my mother-in-law, Jay Brown, Paula Brown, one of my dearest friends. And I remember the comments were, I didn't even know this was possible. A death like she had, which was very much like Ethan's, music and ceremony and kids and celebration and grief, and then, and holistic therapies, and then the after death care, the home vigil, and then the green burial. And people just couldn't believe that this is how dying could be, death and dying could be. So just knowing your options. And I think that's one of the gifts of this film, is in 70 minutes, you see a lot of ways of doing this that you may never have seen before.
Yeah, so true. And the power to just open people's eyes and educate them to something that they could not have imagined, perhaps, and to see what's possible. That's really what we need. We need people to get more comfortable with the images of someone dying and seeing how someone approaches his own death and what becomes possible when we do that, and when we are able to call a community together to help us.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to mention the film. I think we've been awaiting this for a while, for the film to actually be released and come out. And I know there are a lot of screenings being done for the film right now, and people can go to the website, thelastecstaticdaysmovie.com. That's correct. And I'm hosting a screening on March 24th. At 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. And when you go to that website, thelastecstaticdaysmovie.com, you'll see you can sign up for the screening I'm doing, or there are lots of other ones. There are many, many. It's like, I was really amazed how many screenings there are. And there's a link where you can make a donation to get a ticket and attend the screening. So we will all watch the film together and then have a discussion afterwards, which is just, I can't wait. That's going to be so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I know you've already done some of the screenings, I think.
Yeah, I'm amazed that even through the virtual platforms, we can connect in this deep way after the film too. It's been really powerful. Yeah.
Once the screenings are done, I don't know, will we be taking it to any film festivals, or what else is in mind for the film? Yeah. I don't know if you can say that at this point, but.
Well, I think Scott and his team and Prerna and the Last Ecstatic Days team are really spearheading that part of the documentary, the fate of the documentary, I'll say. It was accepted at the Santa Fe International Film Festival and the Boston Globe Docs. And so I think that journey will continue with submissions to the festivals. But hopefully by spring, it'll be available on a platform called Kinema, which will allow people to stream from their home. And then if it got picked up for distribution in a dream world, I think, I don't know, I say dream world, but maybe there's other ways to distribute it that can really have an impact on in a grassroots way, because most people aren't going to be eager to watch a film about death. But when you do it in community, what we're seeing is when you watch it in community and connect afterwards, it does have a ripple effect that you may not get if it was on Netflix and you were streaming it. So I don't know what'll happen, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, same here. So anyone who's interested, first of all, attend one of the screenings now so you can see what it's all about and then know that it might be available in the future to use for if you have a community group or a book club or just people who get together, like it might be something that you would want to do a screening of in your home or at some sort of a community center where you could sit with people, have a talk afterwards and answer questions.
Yeah, I would love to see medical providers engage in the film and process their own experiences with death, because we know the hospital deaths are very different. So that's another vision for the use of the film.
I would love to see that too. And that's one thing I wanted to say. It felt healing in a way. Well, all of my hospice experience for me has been healing for the deaths I witnessed in the hospital that to me felt brutal and cold. And I had just carried a lot of grief from witnessing those deaths and wishing it could have been different and being able to see Ethan's dying. I don't know, somehow it was healing in a way just to watch that and to open up to that sacredness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very healing for me too. Partly just to bring so much of myself to the bedside so freely.
Yes, yes.
Love, you know, without having to play a certain role of a physician. It was a real gift.
Yeah, yeah. Well, indeed, I appreciated so much watching you be with Ethan. And I guess because I feel connected to you ever since you and I had a virtual reality experience together and we connected virtually as smoke bodies, I feel like we're connected on the smoke body level. And so it almost felt like I was there with you, you know, as I watched you being with Ethan. That was really a profound feeling. And so I'm grateful, so grateful that you stepped up and said yes when that call came to you to be part of Ethan's dying.
Thank you.
And so happy that this film is now out there for people to watch. So I'll say it again, the Last Ecstatic Days movie.com, and there will be links in the show notes so people can go there and sign up for one of the screenings that are happening all through March, it looks like, and even into April. So take advantage of that. Thank you, Aditi, for joining me again and to talk about the film.
Thank you, Karen.
And many blessings to you.
Right back at you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Aditi. She is my soul sister in so many ways, and I always love talking with her. And really just watching her work in the film, you will just see what an amazing, beautiful person she is. But also, of course, how amazing Ethan's sister is, the patient who shared his dying journey with us in the film. And this is one of the few films I've seen that actually goes through the very last breath of the patient and even what comes afterwards. So it's educational in that sense, but it is deeply inspiring. And to see how Ethan approached his own dying process, how positive he was, how filled with love and joy and gratitude for life itself, and how he so gracefully navigated his last days, something that I think each one of us could or would aspire to. And I want to remind you once again, please join me if you can for the virtual screening of the film Sunday, March 24th, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. You can register. You make a donation to purchase tickets, but that is a fundraiser to help see this film get put out there into the world. So it's a very worthy cause. I hope I'll see you March 24th at that screening. Also, please share this content. Please let people know about the film and the screening coming up, and also share the podcast if you know someone who might benefit from joining in. And make sure you leave a rating and review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. That's really helpful. Don't forget that I have a YouTube channel also called EOL University. If you enjoy watching videos, you can go there and see my conversation with my guests on the show. So check that out as well if you're a video person. I will be back next week with another conversation with three guests, my partners in creating a compassionate communities model. And we're going to talk all about compassionate communities next week. So I hope you can join us for that. Until then, remember that we're here for love. That's the greatest truth that we could aspire to and to seek in our lifetime. So don't ever lose sight of love. Face your fear and be ready for whatever life brings your way, because there's always something unexpected around the next corner. And just love each and every moment of your very precious, ecstatic life, as Ethan Sisser teaches us. Until next week, bye-bye.